Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. American Family Insurance can help protect your dream home for whatever comes next. You can live in your own oasis or your own clubhouse. Whatever you choose, get the right coverage. Save up to 23% by bundling home and auto. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
This episode of Food Psych is brought to you by my upcoming book, The Wellness Trap. Break free from diet culture, disinformation, and dubious diagnoses, and find your true well-being, which is available for pre-order now. Just go to ChristyHarrison.com/thewellnesstrap to learn more and pre-order for its April 2023 release. That's ChristyHarrison.com/thewellnesstrap. Welcome to Food Psych, a podcast dedicated to critiquing diet and wellness culture and answering your questions about intuitive eating and the anti-diet approach. I'm your host, Christy Harrison, and I'm a registered dietitian, certified intuitive eating counselor, journalist, and author of the books Anti-Diet, which is available now wherever books are sold, and The Wellness Trap, which will be out in early 2023. And by the way, on this show, I avoid saying diet culture stuff like weight and calorie numbers, but we don't censor swear words or other adult language, so listener discretion is advised. Hey there, welcome to this episode of Food Psych. I'm your host, Christy Harrison, and today I'm going to be answering a couple questions quickly rather than one longer one because, frankly, I've been feeling a little hemmed in by this Q&A format I've been doing this season, and I need to do something to shake things up. As I shared in my newsletter a couple weeks ago, I've been working on making more space for the inner voice that sometimes acts as a critic, but that can actually be an important ally if I'm able to make space for it and listen to what it's really saying underneath the criticism. And one thing it's made me realize is that I'm really ready for some changes in my work with this podcast and with the newsletter to mirror the changes that have already happened over the past couple years as I researched and wrote my upcoming book, The Wellness Trap, and stepped into my new role as a parent. So watch this space, or rather listen to this space, for some new developments in the coming weeks and months, including some possible formatting changes and new directions. And now, before I get into the three questions for this week, just a few quick announcements. This episode of Food Psych is brought to you by my Intuitive Eating Fundamentals online course, which is a 3-month immersion in intuitive eating with dozens of hours of content helping you learn this anti-diet approach, troubleshoot common sticking points, and get to a place of greater peace with food. It also has a huge library of Q&As from me and my team to help answer all the frequently and not so frequently asked questions that come up when you're learning or relearning intuitive eating. If you're ready to break free from diet culture and reclaim your right to a peaceful, easy relationship with food, learn more and sign up at ChristyHarrison.com/course. That's ChristyHarrison.com/course. This episode is also brought to you by my second book, The Wellness Trap, Break Free from Diet Culture, Disinformation, and Dubious Diagnoses, and Find Your True Well-Being, which is available for pre-order now. The book explores the connections between diet culture and wellness culture, how the wellness space became a hotbed of scams, misinformation, and conspiracy theories, why many popular alternative and integrative medicine diagnoses are misleading and harmful and deeply entangled with disordered eating, how wellness culture targets vulnerable people and ignores social determinants of health, and what we can do instead to promote true well-being at the individual and collective levels. Just go to ChristyHarrison.com/thewellnesstrap to learn more and pre-order the book for its April 25th release. That's ChristyHarrison.com/thewellnesstrap. Before I answer this week's questions, I'll just give my standard disclaimer that these answers and this podcast in general are for informational and educational purposes only, aren't a substitute for individual medical or mental health advice, and don't constitute a provider-patient relationship. Also, this is just my take as one dietitian and journalist, and I hope you'll seek out other perspectives and consult your own inner compass as well. The first question is from Jennifer Z, who writes, first off, love your podcast and content as I find it very helpful and inspirational in staying motivated in my recovery journey. My question is in regard to discussing my eating disorder in the workplace. My recovery, struggle with disordered eating, and anxiety with food/weight/body image sometimes causes challenges at work. And with a new year upon us, I have found it very triggering during work meetings, mainly Zoom since I work remote, when others bring up the amount of weight they gained or quote-unquote clean eating resolutions they're putting into practice for 2023. Given that I'm recovering from an eating disorder, but no one at my job knows my struggles, these comments and discussions make me uncomfortable. I feel like I'm constantly hiding and putting on a facade when these topics arise, and it sometimes causes anxiety and eating disorder behaviors. But since I'm known as the quote-unquote fit girl who always eats clean and has a great workout routine, I feel like I have to. Since I don't want to give all the team members the nitty-gritty details because many don't understand or give too much insight into my personal life, I'm wondering if you have any insight on what is okay or a safe level of information to share with my close work colleagues so that they're somewhat aware and more cognizant of this growing issue of body image and disordered eating. Also more aware of things that may be triggering for me to talk about during water cooler talk and could lead to negative behaviors. It's a tough discussion to navigate and would love any insight. So thanks for that question, Jennifer. And I'm so sorry you have to deal with this at work. You know, I can really empathize with feeling like you have to hide what you're really going through personally in order to get by in your professional life. And that can be incredibly painful and difficult. I think to some extent, we all have to compartmentalize a bit at work. You know, sometimes that can be helpful because we don't necessarily want all of our colleagues knowing every detail of our innermost lives. But other times that compartmentalization can become suffocating, like trying to hide parts of yourself behind thick, heavy curtains. You know, it might work for a while, but when you get home after a long day, those parts of you are gasping for air and they might become even more insistent, which is why that triggering can sometimes happen when we feel like we have to hide, you know, our disordered eating history or current struggles. So given that you say you sometimes end up using eating disorder behaviors because you don't speak your truth when you hear workplace diet talk, that's a really good sign that your eating disorder isn't responding well to this compartmentalization, right? So I think it makes sense that you want to start opening up a little bit to your close colleagues, at least, though maybe not to everyone on your team, about how those conversations are affecting you. Having a reputation as the quote-unquote fit girl who always eats clean and has a great workout routine can be really pernicious for someone with an eating disorder. So I think that could be a good place to start. You might look for ways to let your close colleagues know that, you know, despite appearances, despite how it looks on the outside, you're actually really struggling. And you can do that without going into too much detail, although, you know, with certain folks, certain close colleagues, you might feel comfortable enough to share a little bit more. And maybe that's going to take multiple conversations and it's going to, you know, take learning to trust that they get it and opening up little by little over time, right? So you don't necessarily know until you try with the people that you're already close to or, you know, relatively close to at work, right? But when you're opening these conversations, you could try saying something like, I know it might seem on the outside like I have it all together. I have a great eating and exercise routine or whatever, but it takes a real toll on me. One way I'm working to heal from it is by trying not to participate in diet talk. Or you could say, you know, I don't want to go into all the details right now, but I just wanted you to know that I am actually struggling in my relationship with food and fitness, and hearing about people's New Year's resolutions, New Year's diets can be hard for me. Or you could just change the subject and plant a little seed while you're doing that. You could say something like, you know, let's talk about something else. I know in the past I've been really into this kind of thing, but I'm actually having a hard time with it, so I'd rather talk about XYZ. Above all, just remember that you don't have to tell them everything about your eating disorder or anything about your eating disorder if you don't want to, and you get to decide the pace at which you reveal more or don't. But once you've laid the groundwork, it might be easier over time to remind people, you know, I'm still not in a place to hear about this kind of stuff right now, so let's talk about X instead. Thanks so much for that great question. The next question is from Emily, who writes, is it possible to be a certified health coach or a dietitian that is certified in lifestyle medicine while also practicing through an intuitive eating/anti-diet lens? So thanks for that question, Emily. And I will say, you know, I looked into the professional society dedicated to lifestyle medicine. I'm not going to name them or link to them here. But according to them, the paradigm includes six pillars, the first of which is a whole food, plant predominant eating pattern. Those are their words. And the second of which is physical activity. Lifestyle medicine prescribes these approaches really across the board to treat and prevent chronic health conditions, and it treats higher weight as a disease. It also recommends starvation-level diets for people with diabetes based on scant evidence and without considering the deeply damaging consequences that frequently occur on those diets. We'll link to a piece, a paper in the show notes about the starvation-level diets that are recommended by lifestyle medicine. Obviously, a huge content warning, trigger warning for that. So in my view, these aspects of lifestyle medicine make it really incompatible with intuitive eating and anti-diet approaches to health. Because lifestyle medicine prescribes restrictive diets that have the potential to trigger or exacerbate disordered eating, as many people I've worked with and many listening to this podcast have experienced. Similarly, prescribing exercise can potentially lead to disordered relationships with movement, especially when that prescription is coupled with the fat equals disease rhetoric and the underlying anti-fat bias that seems to be an integral part of lifestyle medicine. And, you know, you might think you could be a lifestyle medicine provider who offers these prescriptions gently and does your best to avoid overt weight stigma or food shaming. But I think even if you do that, many people are unfortunately vulnerable to disordered eating and problematic relationships with exercise simply because we live in diet culture. And, you know, diet culture consistently makes us feel bad about our food choices and body sizes and shapes, especially those at the higher end of the weight spectrum. So if you're a provider, you know, even gently recommending those things, I think it can really trigger a lot that goes on for people under the surface, you know, a lot of baggage that people are coming in with and inadvertently trigger them into disordered eating. And that's a really common thing, I think, in all arenas of, you know, integrative, functional, holistic, alternative medicine. And I would say lifestyle medicine falls into that camp, right? That sort of general alternative, complementary and alternative medicine umbrella or integrative medicine umbrella, where unfortunately, you know, there are a lot of diet and exercise recommendations. There are a lot of prescriptions for weight loss, even if it's couched in terms of health and wellness. And that can be incredibly triggering for people with any sort of underlying propensity for disordered eating, which they may not know going in, right? I think probably the vast majority of us have that propensity living in diet culture. And certainly for anyone who has pre-existing disordered eating or, you know, even a diagnosed eating disorder, getting those recommendations can be super detrimental to recovery. That said, I will say lifestyle medicine addresses four other areas that are potentially compatible with intuitive eating and anti-diet approaches. That includes sleep, stress management, avoiding risky substance use, and social connections. And those things are great, right? Those can be helpful to focus on in any healthcare practice that wants to promote true well-being, and that those things can very much be aligned with intuitive eating and an anti-diet approach. But I just steer clear of the food and physical activity aspects of lifestyle medicine and of many other forms of integrative and functional medicine for those reasons I mentioned. And I go into that a lot more in my upcoming book, The Wellness Trap. So thanks again for that great question. And the third question is from Skylar, who writes, "Your book, Anti-Diet, specifically the parts that mention wellness diets, really helped me recover from a lot of food restrictions that were at least largely caused by my mom's influence and her ideas about curing my autism. Your work inspired me to try gluten and dairy, and it turns out I'm fine with those foods. So thank you. My question is, you talk a lot about having no forbidden foods, but you also talk about not eating diet foods. But doesn't that just put diet foods into the forbidden foods category? I know forcing yourself to eat diet versions of foods and not allowing yourself to eat the normal versions is really unhealthy. I just wonder if it's okay to eat one diet food if you like it, but eat a bunch of other stuff with it and not restricting any food group or nutrient. I've been getting these diet snacks that I like and mainly eat because they're high in protein and my body craves a lot of proteins and starting testosterone. But I eat a lot of fat, sugar, and carbs from other foods. Is this bad? I know diet culture harms even people who don't diet just by altering the food supply and permeating it with diet foods. But sometimes diet foods can be helpful for people with specific needs. So are diet foods always bad or just mostly? So thanks for sharing, Skylar, and I'm so glad my work has helped you heal from those food restrictions. Unfortunately, there is a lot of wellness diet culture in the autism space, as I'm sure you know. It sounds like you've experienced that firsthand. So you're definitely not alone in going through this. So thanks for your perceptive question. And I would say, no, it definitely is not quote unquote bad, or it's not necessarily bad to eat diet foods sometimes if you truly enjoy them or if they meet a need or craving that's not coming from diet culture. So like most things in this arena, I think it's a matter of what your intentions are behind eating those foods. It sounds like for you, the intentions right now are self-care and responding to a genuine desire, which is great. If at any point you ever notice those intentions changing, becoming more about diet rules and less about listening to your own cues and needs, then you might start rethinking your relationship with this particular diet food. But for now, it sounds like it's working nicely with your life and your needs, and it isn't leading to restriction in other areas, and you genuinely like it. So, you know, it definitely is not quote unquote bad that you're eating it. The main reason I sometimes caution against diet foods, in addition to, you know, the obvious one that I don't recommend dieting or depriving yourself, is because diet foods can leave you really unsatisfied. Many diet foods create an artificial sense of fullness that doesn't really last. You know, they have a lot of added fiber, but there's not really much to them. And that can be confusing for people working to reconnect with their body's cues. So for folks who are trying to get in touch with fullness, get in touch with those fullness cues, I think it can be really helpful to avoid diet foods. But that being said, ultimately, we don't want to have any foods be forbidden, right? Including diet foods. And we can experiment and see which ones we want to keep because we truly like them and which ones we just as soon never eat again because we don't actually enjoy them. So I hope that's helpful, Skylar. And thank you so much. And thanks to Emily and Jennifer for those great questions. If you want to submit your own question for a chance to have it answered either here or in my Food Psych weekly newsletter or both, just go to ChristyHarrison.com/questions. That's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening. And if you found this podcast helpful, I'd be so grateful if you'd just take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. You can go to ChristyHarrison.com/subscribe to see all the places to do that. This episode was brought to you by my second book, The Wellness Trap: Break Free from Diet Culture, Disinformation, and Dubious Diagnoses, and Find Your True Well-Being, which is available for pre-order now. Just go to ChristyHarrison.com/The Wellness Trap to learn more and pre-order it for its release on April 25th. That's ChristyHarrison.com/The Wellness Trap. If you're looking for help healing your own relationship with food, you can grab my free audio guide, 7 Simple Strategies for Finding Peace and Freedom with Food, at ChristyHarrison.com/strategies. That's ChristyHarrison.com/strategies. A huge thanks, as always, to our editor and sound engineer, Mike Lalonde, community and content associate, Vinci Chui, and administrative assistant, Julianne Watasek, for helping me out with all the moving parts that go into producing this show. Our album art was photographed by Abby Moore Photography, and the logo was designed by Melissa Alam. Our theme song was written and performed by Carolyn Pennypacker Riggs, and I'm your host and producer, Christy Harrison. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, stay psyched.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.